want to discuss tonight a case which Shulchan Aruch brings in Sif Tes. We'll get to it later in the week, I hope. Take a break from Rishus and Shalav Rishus. Discuss this case of the Shulchan Aruch, which is the case of a Tshuvas Harash. I mentioned this briefly last week. Somebody was riding his horse. Someone else ran into him, also riding a horse, and injured the sus. So the halacha is chayev. Last week we touched briefly on the question. This happened in the context of a wedding. The question is, why don't you have the patur of hezek that happens in the course of simcha? The minhag was to exempt people from damage that occurs in the context of rowdy celebrations. So there are different approaches in the achronim. Some say this didn't actually happen during the celebration; it happened afterward. Some say that this is a minhag. This is a minhag, and it depends on the place. Some places have a minhag, some places didn't have a minhag. Tonight, I want to focus on another aspect of this ruling of the Rush. The Shulchan Aruch brings that, assuming you have to pay, you pay the value of the damage, the value of the horse. But, however, in this particular case of the Rush, what happened was the victim's horse was not his own horse. It was actually borrowed from a non-Jew, rented or borrowed from a non-Jew. So the Rush Paskins, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that in such a case, assuming that even if the owner, the non-Jew, is going to charge the person he rented or lent it to more than the actual value of the horse or more than the actual value of the damage, either because he's dishonest or because that's the law, that's the contract that says he has to pay some arbitrary amount, the person used the Lashon Alila, which implies that it was just dishonest, it was lawless, but in any event, if the owner of the non-Jew is going to charge the person who had the horse in his custody more than the fair value, ein hamazik chayav l'shalom yosir mashi yishum u'beis. The person who damaged it is not responsible. The modern case would be someone rents a car, you have an accident, you run into his car, so the actual damage as appraised by Beis Din or appraised by the body shops is only $500. For whatever reason, he's on the hook for $1,000 to the leasing company, to the rental car company. You are not chayev for that extra $500. You're not chayev for that full $1,000, even though he's telling you, you caused me this damage. Not for you, I wouldn't have had to pay it. Now I have to pay $1,000. Halacha is that the mazik is not chayev for that.
Is that because of like a grumma?
Yes, because it's grumma. So that's what I want to discuss, whether this is true, whether this is muskum, why this is true. So the Piskei Tshuva brings from the Dalai Merabava, the Sefer of the Nodeh B'Yehuda, he says, if you look at the language of the Rush in the actual Tshuva, he says, Kevan Shalo Kivin. Since the damage, the accident was not deliberate, it was an accident, therefore, you're still chayev, Adnam Wod La'olam, you're still chayev for the actual objective damage that you did, but you're not chayev for the additional amount that's being charged the victim. Dalai Merabava and other Achronim are medayek that the implication of the Rush is kevan shelo kivin. It wasn't deliberate, but if you did maliciously damage someone's property, in such a case, you'd be chayev not only for the objective damage, but also for any additional costs he incurs to pay to the person he took the property from. And again, that's because at Dina de Garmi, those are the two sides of the coin. We haven't studied Garmi and Grumma systematically, but there's a certain class of Grumma which becomes Garmi that you're chayev for. And the Dalai Merabava does not explain why, if this is the type of grumma which is called garmi that you're chayev for, why are you not chayev when it was not deliberate? He doesn't get into that, but that is one of the distinctions the poskim make in the context of garmi. According to at least some poskim, garmi is only chayev if it's deliberate, even if it's considered a fairly direct kind of damage. It's the kind of grumma which is more serious. You're still only chayev if it was deliberate. You're not necessarily chayev if it was b'shogeg. But in any event, that's how the Dalai Merabava and some other Achronim learned the Rush, even though the Shulchan Aruch simply says, Potter, that you're not chayev for the additional cost that the victim has to pay beyond the fair market value. If you are kivein, if you did it deliberately, then you would be chayev. Now, some Achronim say it's not so simple. The Erech Shai, for example, points out that there seems to be a halacha that contradicts this. Later in Siman Shin Pei Vav, that is the primary Siman of the rules of Grumma, the Ramah brings, Beis Yosef, the Ramah brings a tshuva of the Rashba. The case was someone owed a non-Jew money, or even a Jew money, someone owed money to someone else. And there was a bill, a note for the debt, shtar halva. Now, the Jew had paid back all or part of that debt, and the note, therefore, was taken from the creditor and was placed in escrow of a third party, either until he paid the rest of the debt, or for some other reason, it was being held securely by a trusted third party. It was not given back to the creditor because he might have presented it for payment again. Now, this escrow guy did not keep his trust with the two parties. For some reason, either maliciously or carelessness, or for some reason, he gave the bill back to the creditor, and the creditor then, in court, is going to be able to collect the debt again. If he chooses to be dishonest, if he admits the truth, he won't get it, but there's no proof, and if he doesn't have a receipt or anything, and if the creditor presents this note again for payment, he'll get the money again. And certainly, if it's a non-trustworthy person, that's very likely to happen. So here, the Ramah passing like a Tshuva Sarashva, that he is not chayav for this. If the debtor takes the escrow guy to the basin and says, you caused me this terrible loss, because now he can use the shtar again, he's not chayav, that's only a grama. So the Erech Chai and other Acharim point out, that sounds very similar to our case. Just like in our case...
It's a grama?
It's a grama.
From the third party?
The escrow holder, the person who was supposed to be holding the note in escrow,
and he gave it to
his malpractice in giving it back to the creditor, it's only a grama, because it enables him in the future, if he chooses to be dishonest, it doesn't happen right away, the post can say, it's only if he chooses to be dishonest, even though it has potential to cause harm, it's only a grama, because again, it's disconnected from the actual loss of the money from the debtor. But some post can say that's very similar to our case. In our case, what happened? By damaging the horse, I'm enabling an unscrupulous creditor, perhaps, an unscrupulous rental company to squeeze extra money out of you, at least in the case where it's dishonest, let's say. I'm not sure. It might make a difference if there was a contractual right and it was honest, but at least in the case where it was dishonest, what you did by damaging the horse is you enabled the unscrupulous creditor to get more money. And here, by giving back the shtar, you enabled the unscrupulous creditor to get more money. And here we pass in Potter. But some posts can argue that here also we pass in Potter. And here also would be Potter. The coin to this Rashba, you should be Potter. And some posts can, for this and for other reasons, some posts can therefore conclude that our case also, even if it was deliberate hezek, it's not so simple that you'd be chayiv. It might still be only a grama, and therefore, it's not necessarily true that you'd be chayiv at all for such a hezek.
Is there a damage to the third party when he gave this back to the creditor?
The damage is to the lova.
I understand, but there's a third party that had this document,
right? The holder of the escrow, right.
So when he loses his document, is there damage for him? Is there incentive for him to do it or not?
I don't think so. I don't know if the post can discuss why he did it, what motivated him to do it, why he did it. But in the simple case, I think we're assuming that he had no reason. He had no damage. He has no stake in the matter. He just did it for whatever reason.
So, all right.
So I just want to discuss one further perspective on this matter, which is important for Choshen Mishpat in general, and that is the notion of Davar Hagarin L'Mamon. The Ketez HaChoshen, back in Simei Reish Sadi Aleph, discusses a very similar case. This is a case that comes up in the early parts of Choshen Mishpat, a very similar case where somebody, a Jewish moneylender, had lent money to a non-Jew, had received security like a mashkan, like a pawn shop kind of, he had received an item, an expensive item from the non-Jew as a collateral for the debt. Now, someone else, a third party, then damaged that collateral. And not only is he going to lose the collateral, the non-Jew who gave it in said it's worth much more. It's a very expensive item, and he's now billing the Jew who he gave it to, the moneylender, he's billing him a tremendous amount of money, more than the item is actually worth, and somehow in court, we assume he's going to prevail. I don't know why exactly, but somehow in court he's going to be able to collect a lot more money than the item is worth. So the post can discuss again whether the Jew who damaged it is chayev or not. And again, we have at least some post can say that it's a grama and therefore you're potter. Other post can say no, it's garmi, it's the more serious form of grama and therefore you are chayev. The Ketos makes several arguments that you should be potter. One of his arguments is based on the rule, the principle of Davar Hagarin L'Mamon. Davar Hagarin L'Mamon literally means something that causes a loss of money. It sounds very similar to the idea of Grama and Garmi, but the classic case is as follows. The classic case is, let's say I have Kudshim. I say, Harei Alai Ola, I have an obligation to bring an Ola, and I take an animal and I say, this should be my Ola, and somebody else comes and steals it. The question is, does he owe me Tashlumin, kefil dal behei. If he stole my own axe, he's chayev tashlumin kefil dal behei. It wasn't my axe. It was an axe which is not really mine. It's kachim. It belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at this point. But it's garin l'mon. If he takes it away, since I said harei alai ola, I have to bring a new one. I have an obligation to bring an ola. I didn't say harei zu ola. I said harei alai ola. So I have an ongoing obligation. So if he took it away, that's called davar hagarin l'mon. He took money which itself is not really mine, but it's garin l'mon. It causes me to have an additional outlay. Rabbi Shimon says chayiv. We paskin, most poskin paskin, the Shach explains, most poskin paskin, halacha l'maisa potzer. So even though we paskin like Reb Meir, that Dina de Garmi is chayiv, nevertheless, we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, we don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon, we paskin that Dover Hagar L'Maman is potzer. What exactly is the difference? Why isn't every Dover Hagar L'Maman also chayiv because of Garmi? Garmi means in general, anytime I'm garring you a hefzid, if the hezek is close enough, is tight enough, I'm chayiv. So why isn't every situation of Davar Hagar L'Maman basically Chayev, according to us, that we pass Gendina D'Garmi is Chayev? So Tosfos asks this question above a comma. Tosfos says, the difference is, Garmi is something that what you did is something which is not personal to him. Had you done it to anybody, he'd be Chayev the same way. Davar Hagar L'Maman means the property that you damage is property which has a specific value to me, but has no general value to anybody else. The carbon, nobody else cares if you damage this carbon. It's only valuable to me because I said Arei Alai Ola. So for me, this has you are garim mamon. Dina de garmi means, for example, if you burn up a shtar. Someone has a shtar against somebody else. He can collect a legitimate shtar this time. He can collect money from it. You destroy the shtar. So he forfeits the chov. So that shtar is tradable. It's transferable. It has no particular connection to me. I happen to be the current holder of it. But you damage an asset which has general value. It happens to be in my possession now, but it's an asset that has general value. So that is Dina D'Garmi. Masha'en Kane, Davar Hagar L'Maman is you damage something like a carbon which has no value to anyone but me because I said, Arei Alai Ola, this animal can be the fulfillment of my obligation. That is Davar Hagar L'Maman. Another example is a case of a Shar HaNiskel, a case where I have an obligation to you. I took a shar from you. I'm supposed to watch it. As long as the shar is intact, I can return it to you and say, Reish Chalafanecha. Even though it's a shar niskel, it has no value. To me, it has value because I can fulfill my obligation to you by returning it to you. But without focusing on all the technical examples, this is basically the conceptual distinction made by Tosis, which the Ksos endorses. Ksos admits it's Machlokes Rishonim, but the Ksos likes this, and he says, therefore, Garlamaman is something that has specific value only to me. Garmi is something that has general value. Says the Ksos, in these types of cases, where, let's say the case of the expensive collateral given by the debtor, to the non-Jewish debtor, to the Jew. So you can't argue, he says, that this is called Dina de Garmi. He says, because this item, this property, is only valuable to me. It's valuable to me because in its absence, the guy dumps an expensive obligation on it. This is not something that generally has value more than its face value. Same thing I think would apply in our case of the rush. The horse generally has no value beyond $500. To me, because of my relationship with the guy who rented it to me, I might be on the hook for $1,000. But that $1,000 is not an item, is not a value which has general applicability to other people. So the Ksos argues that is called Davar Hagar L'Maman. It's not the regular case of Garmi, and therefore you should be potter. I just wanted to conclude with one other case where this comes up in Chosher Mishpat, a very interesting case, which is a very common kind of situation. There's an interesting tshuva in the Divrei Malkiel. He talks about a case where Reuven owed Shimon money. Reuven paid him some coins. Shimon looked at the coin and said, I think this coin might be bad. I think it might be counterfeit. So Reuven said, no problem. If it's counterfeit, just let me know and I'll give you a different one instead. Shimon took the coin, tried to deposit it in the bank. Bank said, counterfeit, we're confiscating it. So Shimon went back to Reuven and said, okay, give me a replacement. Bank said, it's counterfeit. Reuven said, okay, but give me back the coin. Why do I want a counterfeit coin? Because I know who gave it to me. I know it was a certain person who gave it to me. And if you can give it back to me, I'll give it back to him and he'll give me something else in exchange. We'll just keep passing it down the line. Now that you don't have it, he said, what am I supposed to do? I can't go back to the guy who gave it to me. Now I'm stuck, so I don't want to pay you. In other words, one way of looking at it is, you damage me by taking away my counterfeit coin. The counterfeit coin is worthless. It's an absolutely worthless thing. It's not legal tender. It can't be used for anything. The value that it has simply is that I'm able to go back and get something else in exchange for it. The more common variation of this is a case where you go to a store, you buy a bottle of milk, you buy an appliance, and you find out that it's bad. It's broken. The milk is sour. So you go back to the store and you say, hey, let me have the money back. They say, okay, but give us back the milk. Why do you want sour milk? I can take it to my supplier and he'll give me the money back. I mean, the real world, I don't know if it works like that. I don't think they actually have to present the spoiled milk to each of their suppliers, but in general, in more expensive appliances, maybe you do. The store owner says, I need the object back because I need to get money back for it. So the object itself is not worth very much, but it's gar in the moment. It can cause a hefset of greater value if you can't produce it. Divrei Malkiel says, chayev. That by taking away the counterfeit coin from the other guy, by taking away the broken object, even though it's inherently not really worth anything, that's still chayev. He doesn't introduce the notion of garen l'mamon. Instead, he brings a curious little gemara. The gemara says, if I have a bunch of wheat, and let's say they sold wheat by volume, so in my cubic meter of wheat, there's a rock inside. Halacha is you're allowed to have a certain percentage of rocks as long as it doesn't rise above a certain percentage. So I'm allowed to sell that entire cubic meter of wheat as one saw of wheat, let's say. Now, if someone goes ahead and pulls out the rock, you're not allowed to throw rocks back into the wheat. That's the halacha. If the rock is there, you can leave it in. If the rock has been removed, you can't toss it back in. So someone removes the rock from the wheat, so now the wheat is a little bit less than a saw, and I can only sell it as 98% of a saw, and I can charge less for it. So, but when he took out the rock, I just lost my ability to sell the wheat for the same amount of money I could have sold it for before. Before I could have sold this quantity of wheat as a full saw, now I can only sell it as 98% of a saw. The person who took out the rock is chayev. He caused me a hefset. So the Divrei Malkiel says, you see, even rocks which have no value, but if they cause the vendor a loss by removing them, you're chayev. So here too, even though counterfeit money and spoiled milk and broken appliances have no value, But if in this particular situation they cause the other person a hefsid, you are chayev. Now,
but it's not garmi.
It's not. Well, he does call it garmi, but he doesn't address the question of, well, the question. It might be garmi, or he compares it to this case in the Gemara of the wheat. Now, the case in the Gemara of the wheat, the Rishonim disagree as to whether the chayev is garmi or whether the chayev is even more than garmi, whether it's considered hezek gomer. But some learn it's a chayev of garmi. But my objection to this psak of the Divrei Malkiel was that he ignores the question of davar gar l'mamon. In the case of the wheat, the Rishonim ask, why isn't this davar gar l'mamon? Because we don't pass like Rav Shimon. And the Rishonim say, very similar to the Ksos, the Rishonim say the same point the Ksos made, the davar gar l'mamon is only something whose value is limited to me, but something that has general value is garmi and yechayev. So the rock and the wheat, nothing to do with me. Anybody who has wheat with a rock in it could sell it as wheat. So the rock and the wheat is considered general value and is not considered davar gar l'mamon. In this case of the Divrei Malkiel, of the spoiled milk or of the counterfeit money, that sounds much more like our cases where the value is specific to me because of my relationship with my supplier, and it seems to me, therefore, that it would be a problem of davar gar l'mamon and you would not be chayiv, just as the Ksos tries to argue that in these cases, also, this is a problem of davar gar l'mamon, and you would not apply the rule of garmi. Rather, you would apply the p'tur of davar gar l'mamon, lav k'mamon, damin.